Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. Is it toward or towards? I said toward.
Toward.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Good for you.
Hey, everybody. I'm Kai Rizdahl.
And I'm Molly Wood. Welcome to Make Me Smart, the podcast where we are joined, as always, by all of you. Because none of us is as smart as all of us.
I wonder how many
all of us.
How many all
I put
is.
A lot of alls
should,
in
we
there.
Should, we should do some numbers. Anyway, we are. Here's what we're doing this week. We are reaching out to the people who listen to this podcast because I said something a couple of weeks ago that prompted a little bit of discussion on our part, which is this idea of a market-based approach to ethics in business in America, and I guess in theory, globally as well. And so we're going to hear some of that, actually, a little bit later on.
Yes, because he expressed his usual nihilistic outlook, which is markets don't care if you live or die, and there's probably no reason whatsoever for ethical capitalism and ethics in business. Actually, no. It was great, right? It was like, help us.
Look, I'll tell you what. Sorry to interrupt, but we're going to get a test case this very day, and we'll talk about that later. How's that for a tease?
I know. I want to jump ahead. Yeah. We will get that test case, apparently. I don't know anything about this. Yeah. And we will also hear from someone who is all about this topic. He is a top professor in business ethics and a corporate consultant, Greg Fairchild, at the Darden School of Business. He will answer our questions. He will answer some of your questions.
Also, and on a more fun vein, when we did the promo, I guess it was for the promos, right? For this current, episode, installation, whatever, of this podcast, coming back in March, I had talked about a physics experiment that my father-in-law did with my kids when they were little, and it's crazy fun. Anyway, so I was browbeaten, shall we say, by the producer of this podcast into it's true, gotta call a fact a fact. Facts matter, you know, into doing that experiment on video, which we did, and we're going to put it up on our Facebook page, and we'll do a little call out at the end too, and I will put it on Twitter because it's fun and it's physics in real life, and it will entertain your children if they are of a certain age. That's all we got.
It will, and possibly yes. Even your grown-ups.
Yes.
No matter what.
Yeah, that's
age.
True. You were pretty entertained, weren't
mm-hmm.
you?
Yeah. I was really entertained, yeah. as you will see in the video. Yeah. But before we do all of that, we get to indulge ourselves just a little bit.
So we are on Tuesday after Memorial Day as we tape this, just so everybody knows what's going on. Mm-hmm. You want to go first or you want me to go first?
I want you to go first because always a mystery, you guys. I would like to reveal a little, have a behind the curtains
what?
Moment,
really?
Which is that before we tape the show, I go in, follow the little rules, and I trot over to the spreadsheet and I put in some links of things that I think are good fixation. And Kai does not do that.
Okay,
it is like a big secret.
A moment here so, in my defense, counselor, if I might. So two things. One is, and I think
I'm not
I've said
mad
this,
at you.
I know. I think I've said this before, mm-hmm. and it makes producers of me in virtually any context, live events, radio, podcasts, whatever. But I make producers crazy. I don't actually like to think about things before I say them on the radio, which I know sounds oxymoronic, but it happens to be the truth because I believe that that gets you the. This is going to sound. Oh my God! This is going to sound terrible. I believe that gets you the best me, the most me that you can have.
Which is exactly what we want, actually, on this show.
Is a value add. So the reason I don't trot over to the spreadsheet and type it in like I'm supposed to is because I don't usually know until I sit down in front of the microphone what I'm going to say.
I know. So then that's why I want you to go first, because I'm like dying over here. I'm in suspense.
Okay.
I mean, it works on every level. You get all the chi, and I'm sitting here like, come on, lay it on me.
Yeah, all right.
What you got?
So I have two things, one of which is fun and one of which is not. So I'll do the fun first, and it goes like this. I saw Solo this weekend. I loved it, and everybody else can pound sand.
Dude, I thought it was great. Me too.
I thought it was great.
I thought it was really great.
Really good.
You know, okay. I have this theory that this is going to be like the slow burn hit of the summer, because everybody's still seeing Avengers and everybody's still seeing, I get it, and Deadpool 2. But this movie, I could not agree with you more. I loved it.
Totally.
And part of the reason I loved it is because it was not a freaking bummer.
Right. Right.
Like so many other movies in life. It's just not a bummer. It's just,
nice sequel to the bummer. You ready for the bummer? Because I told you I had one upbeat and one downbeat. The downbeat one goes like this, and I'm going to name four names here, and then I'll tell you why I'm naming them. Lieutenant Junior Grade Randy Furtado, Airman Ronald Krause, Lieutenant Greg Lerner, and Lieutenant Patrick Ardaes. I was in the United States Navy for 8 years. I was in the fleet for 3.5. And in my 3.5 years in the fleet, actually four technically if you count Pat, those four men were killed in non-combat operations. And I bring that up because, first of all, it's a Tuesday after Memorial Day, and let's remember what Memorial Day is for, which is not Happy Memorial Day, but rather let's remember Memorial Day. But also the tweet of the President of the United States the other day, yesterday, in which he said this, Happy Memorial Day. Those who died for our great country would be very happy and proud at how well our country is doing today. Best economy in decades, lowest unemployment numbers for blacks and Hispanics ever, and women in 18 years, rebuilding our military, and so much more. Nice exclamation point. I will let that speak for itself, but I will just point out the names of those four men. Lieutenant Junior Grade Randy Furtado, killed in an F-14 accident in 1988. Airman Ronald Krause, killed on the USS Theodore Roosevelt in 1989. Patrick Ardaes, killed in the Mediterranean in 1993. And Greg Lerner, killed in Puerto Rico in 1990. That's it. So I told you I had a downer.
Yeah. But that's a good one.
But, you know.
And anyway. I think that, I think that probably about does it for the fixation, actually.
Are we done?
I think that
I didn't mean to do that.
No, no. Okay. You know what? Because really, what's more important than that?
All right.
All right, we're going to have a little conversation about getting it right, which I think is, you know, an appropriate follow-on.
Yeah.
We have with us today Greg Fairchild, a professor of doing the right thing in business, or more officially, strategic management, entrepreneurship, and what we called him up to talk about today, which is ethics, at the Darden School of Business at the University of Virginia.
Fun fact, I went to college with Holly Darden, whose father or grandfather or whatever it was, is the Darden in the Darden School of Business. Anyway.
What? Really? Wow.
Yeah, totally. Anyway, he is online from Charlottesville. Are you guys done for the year yet, Greg, or are you still in grade and finals? What are you doing?
You know, finals ended just about 2 weeks ago. We are done grading, but you know, business schools never stop. We've got executives flowing in and out. And I got to tell you, Kai, I'm going to match you. I know the nephew of that very Colgate.
Oh, is that right?
Myself.
Oh, well, there you go.
I do.
Yeah. Yeah. And it helps to know rich people, I guess, is the answer to that one. All right.
I was going to say, I can't relate to any of this, you guys.
Oh, sure you can. Can I start with my real life example of ethics in business today?
Please.
Please.
Okay. It goes like this, and I actually believe this. You may or may not have seen, by the time you listen to this podcast, and Greg, I don't know if you've seen it yet, floating around online, the tweet from Roseanne Barr, the vile, vile tweet from Roseanne Barr about Valerie Jarrett, one of President Obama's domestic policy advisors. I believe it was vile and racist and horrible and all of those things. I think today is a test case of business ethics for the Walt Disney Corporation and ABC.
Mm-hmm.
Discuss.
So the question is whether someone that's an employee of an organization who goes and does something that I'm sure she feels is free speech is something that the company has to respond to. Is that the ethics question?
Well, sort of. I mean, let's face it, right? She's more than just an employee. She's a figurehead. She's one of the stars of their hottest new program. She's making them zillions of dollars, and here she has done a reprehensible thing.
Right.
For which, by the way, she has, quote-unquote, apologized.
And Wanda, we should point out here, too, that there has already been some response, which is that Wanda Sykes, her co-star, said she's not returning to the show.
Oh, goodness.
But, yeah, so what happens in this scenario where ABC and Disney are making a lot of money off of this top-rated show, but also have an opportunity to do something, you know, potentially as soon as this afternoon, the day that we are taping?
So, you know, we've been dealing with this question with a whole lot of our consumer products companies and our media companies. Yeah. They have the issue that there are people that are known, recognized, associated with their products, associated with their media companies, and they've gone and said things that, gosh, one of the great things about Twitter is it has no filter.
Mm-hmm.
And as that's come along, the companies have had these moments where they've said, oh, my goodness. And there's the distancing. There's the should that person have the right to free speech? Is this all in the domain of the clash of ideas? And I think the companies find themselves in this moment, just like you've said, wondering what everyone is waiting for them to do.
Yeah. So and we should say by the time this drops in like 5-6 hours, there could be a decision and a resolution of this. But what's the I mean, if you want a market-based approach to business ethics, right, you could have people not watching a Roseanne show when season two starts in the fall, and I'm sure it's already mostly in the can, right? Or you could have Disney and Bob Iger, the CEO, and ABC preempting them and saying, we're not going to stand for this.
Well, the question that's interesting is, what does the not stand for this mean? Are they going to censure her? Are they going to make a statement about what she said? Or are they really going to pull her off the air altogether?
So this is interesting. This gets into the me and Molly
this
conversation.
This is our question
there
for you, man.
There you go. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Our question for you is, if you were teaching this as a case study, you know, what should this company do? What's the ethical move here?
Oh, so that's the way this works. You ask me the question.
Yeah, turns out. Program. You make us smart.
So this is not unlike a situation we deal with in the ethics class. Actually, we have a number of opportunities to talk about the questions around what happens with media companies or entertainment companies when their constituents do certain things, their employees. And, you know, we just spent a wonderful discussion this spring with our MBA students about the NFL and taking a knee.
Yeah, totally.
And here you have a situation where a group of employees have decided that there's an issue that they feel is critical. It's an issue happening outside the purview of the company. It's an issue that – or companies – and that issue is one that they care deeply about and feel like, in fact, their opportunity to be on camera is their opportunity to express themselves. And they find that after doing that – the company, and there's a discussion about whether they should or they shouldn't. And, you know, we had this discussion in the classroom with the students. And I'll tell you, you get the gamut. You get students who point out that NFL players are employees, and as employees, companies can have codes of conduct. And you also get the discussion about the inability of companies to constrain people in talking about what's happening in their personal and their political lives. And from an ethics standpoint, the question becomes one of where does the domain in which a company has the ability to have the say that there's a particular activity that's outside of a code of conduct? And certainly the question of whether someone's commenting on the political environment that they're in at the time is not one where my students feel, I feel, that domain extends.
Hmm. So what are the consequences? Because I think what we've been talking about here is whether there is a market force for ethical behavior, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Is that a fair way to sum that up, Kai?
Mm-hmm.
And so if in trying to find a market reason for good behavior, what are the consequences to a company of essentially saying, we don't care. We're going to grow at all costs and do whatever we want.
Right. And so the NFL's theory is we've seen declining viewership this past season, right? We're getting beat up by the president of the United States, and now we're going to do this thing. And I guess it's yet to be seen what's going to happen with Roseanne and Disney. But what's the market-based rationale here?
Well, the first part is we're not sure that the reason that the declines have occurred have to do explicitly with this one factor.
Mm-hmm.
The declines in interest in the NFL are also coming from some very clear concerns about, again, the treatment of the bodies of the players. We certainly have this dramatic event.
And I should say the treatment of and the players' treatment
women.
Of other bodies.
Yes.
Yeah, of women, right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's
and
why
so,
I stopped watching.
So we're not sure. And I think, Molly, you're a sports fan, basketball specifically. So I could imagine those questions for those teams, and let's call them firms, are ones that consumers take really seriously. Although I think what we've learned is some do and some don't. What we don't know is whether the knee is the cause of the market reaction they've had. And we won't know either if the numbers come back this year that it's because there isn't a protest on the field.
Because the firms have said you may not do this and still be employed, in essence, right? Witness Colin Kaepernick.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So let me get you back to Roseanne and Bob Iger. What is the conversation that is happening now in the halls of the Disney company?
Well, I'm sure Bob Iger and his marketing and branding gurus are having deep conversations. You know, this is a company that prided itself on being America's family broadcaster. This is a company that prided itself on bringing princesses and mermaids and really homespun stories into the house. And in fact, there's a certain way of looking at Roseanne that she was the average American. But Roseanne now is presenting a different face. And as she presents that different face, which she probably feels is authentic and may even feel that it's authentic to the people who enjoy her, they're now at a crossroads because this is a national broadcaster. This is a national broadcaster, again, that prides itself on being the family broad-scale purveyor. So my guess is that, again, this line between what the product is that the company provides and the distance someone goes is going to be very, very clear. I expect you'll have some response, whether it'll be a pulling of the company, pulling her off the air. That's a very different thing.
So to that kind of question about the product and broader issues that come up, one of the things you talk about in your teaching is this idea of informational asymmetry, that companies know a bunch. For example, Facebook may be the only company that understands its own business model, right? Or how complicated, let's say, data-based ad technology really is. And then consumers and users and lawmakers don't have access to all of that information. So taking it from the sort of simple, which is like, you know, star of show says super racist thing, what does company do? To what happens when consumers just fundamentally are getting fleeced, not even necessarily willfully, but because they don't have all the information. How does that start to muddy the waters?
Well, you know, especially in what we call technology industries, where you're absolutely right, Molly, we're relatively clear on what happens when a star, a celebrity, says something. In fact, there'll be some people listening to this that'll believe that Roseanne has said this to, in fact, improve her ratings. But the difference we're talking about when we're talking of technology is we're interested in technologies because they do magical things that we hadn't seen before. We're interested in technologies because it's sci-fi come to life. We know it, we marvel at it, but we don't quite understand it. And yet, that same situation means that there's some stuff going on behind the scenes, behind the way that the autonomous vehicle is able to drive down the street that we don't quite understand, and we're taking a leap of faith. And somewhere in that leap of faith is this belief that someone is worried about the beneficence of me and the beneficence that I don't even understand yet. And so it's that moment that the company finds itself in this dilemma. They have more information. They have more knowledge. And then the question becomes, when do they inform? How do they inform? And what do they do about it?
To what degree is this on consumers? And I ask that in two different ways. One is consumers hoping that companies will do the right, and I'm doing air quotes thing, do the right thing as those consumers see it. That is to say, taking a passive approach if you're a consumer. And the other is taking an active approach, boycotting, protesting, pulling your patronage from, you know, ABC or Disney or the NFL.
Well, you know, again, in the ABC-NFL situation, the consumer absolutely has the right to vote and knows what she's voting for. So she knows that because women are being mistreated by NFL players, hey, I'm deciding I'm not that excited about what's happening with the Patriots because of these other issues that I know about. When we're talking now about a technology, we're in a much different situation. We really are not as clear about what exactly the company is doing and isn't doing and how my data is being used. That's probably the most pertinent example in today's news. Yeah. But trust me, there are many others where we are not aware of the way that the product I'm using is actually operating and what other sort of secondary effects might be going on that I never considered.
What about a case like Starbucks, where there's a lot of consumer pressure because of an incident? You know, the company, probably as this show is dropping right now, a bunch of stores are closed. Starbucks is going to lose maybe $4 million. But is that the kind of thing where the company, where the consumer behavior has, the consumer action has worked? And is that what it takes?
So, you know, it's clear that once that video went viral, the company, just like you're saying about this Roseanne tweet, there was a moment where folks in the main offices were saying, oh boy, today's a lot different than we thought it was going to be. And it's in that moment that there's this discussion of what we're going to do. And we know that over the ensuing days, there was an apology from the CEO. We know that in the ensuing days, there was a, let's do something about this larger societal problem. Let us not forget, by the way, Starbucks not long ago had actually encouraged a national dialogue around diversity in America. Let us not forget that that actually didn't go well either. And there were some critiques of that by consumers. In these incredibly rapid environments we live in, where consumers can share information, a screenshot, an experience that they have in a Starbucks store, and then have the rest of the world look at it and know about it and critique it, we're in a very different world in that regard. But again, so much of what you all have been talking about is this area where, in fact, there's this asymmetry and we're not as clear. It's very easy to see that two people were mistreated in a Starbucks store. It's much harder to know that the data that you're using while you're sharing with your family is in fact data that's being sold, packaged, and used by any number of purveyors in ways you never considered.
So on the whole market-based approach to ethics in business, let me ask you this question then. Given that companies, generally speaking, want to maximize profit, number one, and that consumers, number two, although they are numerous, are diffuse as a market force, right? Can there ever be a market-based approach to business ethics?
Yeah. So,
you know, there's like carbon trading and stuff. We tried that with climate change. Can we do it in business?
You know, Kai, I love the idea of businesses exist to create profits. Businesses also exist to create value. And profits are the benefit you get for creating value. And if we looked at it from that standpoint, you would know, or someone would wonder, whether something they're doing that once they had to look in a mirror about that question, if they knew that they might not want to look at themselves in that moment, then they'd have questions about whether they're creating value. Now, in the example you give, our market-based approach, well, again, you've got to let people know what they're voting for and what they're voting against.
Hmm.
So we could imagine an entirely new social media platform that says, you know what, our business model is not based on making the social media platform free. It's based on a subscription model. We sell no data. It all stays internal. And that company could conceivably enter the market and grow rapidly simply because now there's an understanding of the implication that people didn't understand before. So there has to be this educational moment where the consumer begins to understand, gee, I didn't know that this was happening. And now that I do, there's a new purveyor offering a very different product, which actually is better. You know, an example, the company profiled in the book Flash Boys by Michael Lewis, IEX.
Yep.
This is a high-speed trading firm.
Yep.
The vast majority of Americans have no idea what a high-speed trader does or what high-speed trading is, that in microseconds, millions of dollars show up as differences in stock prices. And then to think back to how those millisecond differences end up in affecting average consumers, average Americans every day, is a whole series of educational steps that have to occur. And without knowing that, this company IEX, which is a trading platform dedicated to the idea of being transparent, that platform only becomes motivating once people know that the existing platforms, old, strong brand names, might not be doing all that they should be.
Hmm.
what I hear you saying is that consumers actually do have power when they are appropriately informed and choose to exercise it.
Yeah.
And that seems like good news.
I think it is. I think it is.
Great. I love it. All right. We're gonna keep Greg on the line.
Yep.
He is working hard today. Please let us know what you think. Keep your thoughts coming. MakeMeSmart@Marketplace.org is our email address. We're going to talk to we're going to put a bunch of your questions to Greg after we pay our bills.
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
Get one of the most successful broadcasts in television history on your schedule with the 60 Minutes podcast. Hard-hitting investigative reports, news, and culture maker interviews and in-depth profiles are waiting for you in every episode. Listen to 60 Minutes every Sunday wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Greg, we're back. We have some listeners that chimed in with their questions about ethics because this has been sort of an ongoing conversation. We thought we would, you know, just hit you with some of them to see what you think.
What I love is that line in the rundown here that says, no sting. So I'm just going to keep
going
on this one.
No music.
Sting.
Keep talking.
Here we go. So we talked to Laura Noreen a couple of 3 weeks ago now, and she was talking about how the frontier of ethics really are going to be in cognitive improvements. Things like transhumanism, which is chips in your brain, basically, right? Molly, is that fair? Or am I overgeneralizing?
Yes. Okay, well, it's more, much more than that.
Much more
yes.
than that. But anyway, which goes to this comment from a listener named Eastman Lewis, which goes like this. There are much less far-out examples of the same problem. Drugs like caffeine, nicotine, and amphetamine, Ritalin, etc., can clearly enhance cognitive performance and focus. Is it unethical for a student who isn't prescribed amphetamines to take it to study for a test? What about a person who some other doctors would diagnose with ADHD and others who wouldn't? Greg, what do you think? Ethical, not ethical?
Well, it's absolutely an ethical discussion. So the question of whether or not there are technologies, be they pharmaceutical, be they digital, be they mechanical, that in some way enhance our ability. You know, the entire discussion about Pistorius in the Olympics and whether or not he had unfair advantages on the basis of what we all know was a birth defect became a big part of this very same discussion. You know, the ethical question, I think, is whether or not there is a knowledge that this particular diagnosis is being used to create some unfair advantage. If we take the idea that the pie that we're competing for is fixed and that the improvement one gets means somebody else is going to get less pie, well, then we've got a discussion we have to have. If, on the other hand, we view that the pie is malleable, that it can grow, that it can get bigger, and if in some way we enhance the performance of one and it adds to the greater performance of the whole, then I don't know that we're dealing with the same type of question. So I think the place where that really gets its meat, gets its strength, gets its power, is when we have some sort of zero-sum game and some sort of competitive sense where one gain and another loses.
I love that our show is literally unfolding in real time.
Unbelievable. It used to happen a lot a year ago, and here we go again.
It really did. And then we got so much more broadly focused. However, Greg, bulletin
yes.
crossing the lines at this moment. ABC says Roseanne's Twitter statement is abhorrent, repugnant, and inconsistent with our values. And this is the part where they say the surprising thing, which is we have decided to cancel her show. Greg,
whoa.
Your response, live.
Yeah, live.
Breaking news.
Wow. So this is a statement where, as I said, a company who's built its brand on values, and or more specifically, a certain set of family values, has said this behavior is inconsistent. Even if we want to call it political speech, opinion speech, personal speech, that behavior is out of step with what we agree to. You know, by the way, I should say, companies like Disney, and particularly other media companies as well, have long had waivers in the contracts that involve personal behavior. And these types of waivers are in the contracts. I can't speak to whether there's one for Roseanne, but it really wouldn't surprise me. These types of contracts include those types of waivers for if you engage in certain types of behavior after we've brought you in, because there's economic value in Roseanne's name, visage, words. And so she, in fact, in this moment, my read of what they're saying is you've lowered the value of our investment. And not only that, you've affected the larger branding that we have as an organization. And if you take those two together, they've made the decision that the cost of saying very little or waving hands without actually acting are greater than the benefit that might accrue from keeping her around.
Well, it's really funny. You mentioned the benefit of saying very little. I think it's two full sentences, this whole statement, which carries with it unbelievable amounts of monetary and financial impact, the moral impact of what they're saying. I think it's kind of remarkable, actually.
Well, let me suggest that there were some marketers and MBAs running numbers today, and they were looking at the cost and benefits of keeping versus letting her go. And I'm not saying that, again, the dollars called the decision, but I can see a clear way where this is a very different discussion for a different media company who hasn't built its brand in the way the Disney company has.
Right.
I mean, that's what I wonder about, too, right? Is like fundamentally, it's like you said, there are definitely dollars involved and there's this kind of long-term branding question. And I guess what it comes down to is every company making that calculation? Because it feels like some of them are saying there may not be an immediate and obvious market impetus. And others are saying long-term, that's what matters. And maybe that's why they're investing in apology ads like Facebook and Uber and Wells Fargo. That there's this kind of entire ecosystem, and it's the short-sighted companies that say, we're still making money. Because another company, you're absolutely right, could have said, yeah, but Roseanne gets great ratings. It's worth
and,
it.
And some cable company that's trying to be edgier as opposed to a company that's the home of Snow White, right, is a different battle.
You know, Molly, your question. Purdue Pharma has just come out and it's been revealed about OxyContin. You know, so we're in the midst of a national crisis that's affecting all sorts of communities in ways we never intended, never anticipated, never thought. And it turns out that this company knew all the way back in 1996, 20 years ago, that this product, a product they did not intend to be used this way, but they did know 20 years ago that it was being crushed and snorted. And at that moment, the moment of knowledge, the moment of discretion, the moment of responsibility, this is when people do, just as I'm sure at the Walt Disney Company, they need to run the numbers and make the decision. But the numbers, again, aren't purely financial. If I'm Purdue Pharma, no one knew. This was in a confidential Justice Department memo. Yeah. It was only known to a few. It wasn't public yet. So now the question is, can we continue to operate in this way without a rejoinder, without a response? And some of this, again, goes back to the degree to which the consumer is informed or not.
Of note here, though, just to wrap it up on Purdue Pharma, and Greg, we could talk to you all day, but we really can't because everybody's got things to do. Purdue Pharma is, number one, a privately held company, right? So they don't have market pressure. I mean, I don't know what Disney's shares are doing today, but if they had come out and said, yay, Roseanne, it would have been a whole different story for ticker symbol DIS, right? So that's number one. Number two, and another set of initials, TUH, The Uncertain Hour. Our Chrissy Clark and Caitlin Esch did a podcast called The Uncertain Hour about Purdue Pharmaceuticals, which I encourage you, Greg, if you're interested, but also anybody listening to this thing, to listen to, because it's an amazing tale of what that company knew and when they knew it. And also, we had it like 8 months before the New York Times. I'm just saying. So there you go. That was Greg Fairchild. He is a professor of business ethics at the University of Virginia's Darden School, and who has graciously given us 33 minutes of his time to sort of chat about this stuff, which is kind of cool and also very real right now, as we saw by the news today.
It is, and we appreciate it. We had to interrupt our reading of your questions so that we could cover the news in real time.
Yeah, it was good.
It was like getting, you know, bumped on CNBC over breaking news. Not that that's ever happened to me. But thank you, Greg.
No, you threw me stuff I didn't see coming. That's great.
And please, everyone else, keep the questions and the comments coming, because we will get right back to them next week. MakeMeSmart@marketplace.org is our email address. You can tweet us at Kai Rizdahl, at Molly Wood, and you can listen to past episodes and find The Uncertain Hour all at our website, marketplace.org.
And, also, we'll by the way, that physics experiment video that I talked about up top.
Oh,
we're going to
put
that there too.
The video.
We're gonna put that there too. Just on a, yeah, on a way lighter note. Way lighter note. Yeah, you can see us in person.
Yeah, if you'd see Solo and watch our video, and those are basically like summer chasers is what they are. And you're going to love it.
All right, we're going. Make Me Smart is produced by Chris Olin and Shara Morris. Eve Tro is the senior producer. This week's program, Kai Speak English, was engineered by Charlton Thorpe. Our theme music is composed by Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez.
The executive director of On Demand is Satara Nieves, and the senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark. And that is where the buck stops.
It does stop there. Special guest star once again today, Greg Fairchild. Thank you so much for your time, Greg. Have a nice afternoon.
Take care.
Thank you. All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Well, that couldn't have worked out better.
Yeah, look at this. I'm looking up at CNN right now. Roseanne's all over there.
No.
Yeah, that's a big story. This music is still going.
I'm still dancing. I'm fine with it.
All right. No more dancing.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.